Hi, everyone, and welcome to the 19th Hole Golf Show. I'm Ryan Balanchine. It's good to have you here with us. It is a crazy week in the history of professional golf. And obviously, what happened yesterday, the announcement that we will talk about for the entire show this week, is groundbreaking. It's ground-shaking, earth-quaking. It's going to change a lot of things. I think about golf, and I think we are just beginning to consider what will happen here, what has happened, what will happen, what could happen in the next few days, weeks, months, years, as it relates to all things. PGA Tour, DP World Tour, Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia is coming together to form a for-profit entity that will put their commercial interests in the same organization and combine it with Saudi money. So let's start at the top, start with what the announcement included, what it mentioned, a little bit about Jay Monahan and how he was peppered, and frankly, how he should be peppered moving forward, and whether this thing will ever actually get done. I spent a lot of time yesterday talking with different people, talking with people who are sort of on the inside of the tour, sort of on the outside of from a business perspective, people who are in the antitrust world, and just people who wanted to hear my point of view on all of this. And I think we'll get to all of that. We've got plenty of time to talk about that. So let's start with kind of where things were. So around 10 a.m. yesterday, not too long after the market opened, the word started to leak out. I just finished recording two off the first for the morning. We're talking about golf's longest day results and Scottie Scheffler being bad at putting all of a sudden and Rory McIlroy being a terrible wedge player. And I started getting text messages and messages otherwise from people who either wanted me to comment or come on a radio show or hear what I had to say from a friend's perspective. And I had no idea what was going on, and then obviously figured out that the PGA Tour, the DP World Tour, and the Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia are combining their commercial assets together to form a single for-profit company that will at some point launch in the future. And effectively what they have right now is an agreement in principle to create this. And what that will mean from a structure standpoint is that the PGA Tour, Inc. will continue to exist as a 501c6 membership-based organization. The commercial interests of the PGA Tour, DP World Tour, and the Public Investment Fund as it relates to golf will come into this company. The Public Investment Fund will be the lead and sole corporate entity investing into this. They will take a minority stake, as it's described. We'll talk about that in a little bit. And as an equity stake in this, the PGA Tour will have a majority of seats on the board, although Yasser Al-Rumayyan, who is the governor of the Public Investment Fund, he will be the chair of the board. Jay Monahan will remain the PGA Tour commissioner. We'll talk about that in a little bit. He will also become the CEO of this new organization, an act of self-preservation if I've ever seen one. And then from there, we don't really know a lot. And between yesterday and this morning, I compiled over at golfnewsnet.com, and you can read it if you want, a going list of questions that I have that I don't know the answers to. I maybe have inclinations about some of them. A couple aren't serious, but most are. And there's a lot of things that we don't know about this. And I don't know how quickly we will know answers to any of those questions. Some of them are based on what will come out of the forthcoming agreement between all sides. That's still got to be figured out. Still got to figure out that for three different groups. So that's a lot to work out, and I have a feeling that this all seemed like a get-to-the-deal kind of thing so that they could end the lawsuits and the PGA Tour could stop hemorrhaging money and legal fees. And then they could get to the part where they figure out how to work together. So why do I think this came together? LIV's golf rating, LIV TV's ratings are, TV ratings are awful. No one watches the product. It has been a commercial failure at every level, right? Just a few weeks ago, LIV announced that they would charge people $3 a day in the United States to watch LIV streamed on YouTube so they wouldn't have to watch it for free on the CW app. And now, just a few weeks later, Saudi Arabia has effectively bought men's professional golf. And please do not delude yourself into thinking otherwise. That is exactly what they have done. They have bought men's professional golf. You might say, oh, well, they're a minority investor. Oh, they don't have control of the board. Some points to counter that. First of all, Yasser Al-Rumayyan will be the chairman. And the chairman of the board of anything has quite a lot of power. Also depends who gets on the board ultimately after that, what that board makeup looks like. And not just in the short term, because we're going to assume that Jimmy Dunn, who hypocritically organized this deal after being so much against this, that he then found himself for it. And I think he has a lot to answer for this. But you're going to have people like that who can be apparently be compromised that are going to be on this board. And they may be against the Saudis for a while, but over time, the Saudis are going to find a way to pay off or introduce people that they want onto the board. It's going to happen. Now, it might not be complete and total, but it's going to be pretty substantial over time. Also, they're the money part of this. When you've seen deals like this in the past, and I've almost brokered parts of deals like this for GNN and walked away from them, where companies come together, combining their assets, and then value their stake in the company based upon what they're bringing to the table. Well, we don't know exactly what the Saudis are willing to bring to the table yet. We also don't know what they agree with the PGA Tour and the DP World Tour as their common valuations, right? We don't know what the PGA Tour will be valued at in the end. So the PGA Tour and the DP World Tour's contribution to this organization is what they've got. Cash on hand, assets, intellectual property, contracts, stuff like that, right? That's probably going to put the PGA Tour in the range of, I don't know, $10 billion is my guess, something like that. And that will put them as the plurality owner because the DP World Tour will have a piece of this. And obviously, the public investment fund will. But will they be investing to have a 20% stake, 10% stake, 49.9% stake? I don't know what that looks like. I really don't. And I don't think anyone entirely knows either. And whatever that stake looks like, you have to assume LIV is not totally worthless because they're bringing that. But you assume LIV goes away because LIV was really a means to an end. And we'll talk about that too. But assuming that LIV goes away, and generally speaking, as a league, because they want this all together, right? They want the best players together. And you assume that goes away, then really their contribution to this is money. And how many untold billions they put into this depends on what stake that they want. And they could start small when they can grow it, or they could take it all at once. But a very important line in the announcement is that the public investment fund has the right of first refusal for anyone to invest in this organization moving forward. So they can dictate who gets in and who doesn't. Further, they have the right of first refusal to any investor in the PGA Tour and the DP World Tour. So they will have an opportunity to invest in those organizations if they wish. I think that's an important backup point for the Saudis to say, well, you can't go around us and go get private investment for your PGA Tour and your DP World Tour and then boot us from this. That they're trying to kind of cover themselves that way. And I think it's important to note also that it doesn't matter how much the money is at the start. That can change and grow over time. But once the PGA Tour gets addicted to having Saudi money there. They're calling the shots. They're in charge. It doesn't matter what, how it's set up. They've got the money. And if they withdraw the money, if they withdraw the investment, whether they choose to sell it or just write it off or whatever, then the PGA Tour goes right back to where it started. So they have a knife dangling, or bone saw, whatever you want to use, dangling over them in perpetuity, unless other investors come along and put in massive amounts of money and start to kind of push the Saudis out. And that is a possible outcome of this. I think it's long-term and far-fetched, but there's always the possibility that you could get other big investors to come in and take a piece and keep taking pieces, and eventually the Saudis sell off their piece for an enormous sum of money. But if we're talking about an investment for them of, I don't know, $10 billion, they have a wealth fund worth $700 billion. They're making insane amounts of money every day. This isn't, to me, does not strike me as something for the just a long-term money-making project. This is about reputation. This is about opening other avenues that they may get into because of being involved in golf and having their reputation whitewashed to a degree, but people just becoming more comfortable with working with them over time. That's the point here. It's not to turn $10 billion into $50 billion. I mean, if that happens, it happens. But I don't think that's really the point of this. Could be, but I think it's a side effect at best. So the Saudis are in charge. They have bought men's professional golf. The question is what all of this looks like moving forward. And there's 50 other questions. Does LIV Golf go away? Does the PGA Tour get rebranded? What does the structure look like of these three things? If LIV goes away, is it all PGA Tour? Frankly, the DP World Tour doesn't need to be part of this. They have been put into this for some reason, and I don't know what that reason is. And I think it's relevant when we find it out. But there's no reason for the DP World Tour to be involved here. Their business is insignificant compared to the PGA Tours. The only things that I can think of for the reasons that Keith Pelley got involved here is that, one, they could have been a sellout and sold out to the Saudis. So maybe they could have been the first domino to fall, and so the PGA Tour got in line. It could have been possible that maybe there's just goodwill between Pelley and Monahan. And Monahan said, look, hey, you got into bed with us in this partnership. We're going to take you to the finish line. We're not going to make you irrelevant. Don't know. We'll find that out. But I think there are plenty of valid questions about how this came together, why it came together, what was the reasoning behind it. And I think there are a whole lot of reasons here. It all really boils down to money, but there are a lot of impacts on that factor into the equation, right? One, we've got these two lawsuits that are now going away. We've got a lawsuit between the LIV players that became just LIV Golf Inc. only against the PGA Tour in the countersuit. And they were getting to the point where they were getting stuck up in court, and they were going to be stuck in a long line probably of waiting and motions and appeals. The Saudis didn't want to be deposed and go through discovery about the public investment fund, which they were going to be subject to. The PGA Tour didn't want the opposite. They didn't want their books opened or to go through their potential antitrust allegations. They didn't want to go through potentially looking bad or looking particularly complicated or legal gray area about how they operate tournaments and how that all works together. They didn't want that. And the way that it was going, this lawsuit or these two lawsuits would have continued forever. I mean, this isn't a thing that would have been a end of the year, we're done thing. The lawsuit was supposed to go to trial next year. And that's the earliest it was going to happen. And then at that point, you start to bring in the possibility of different types of appeals and motions and all these different types of things. The billable hours have been through the roof. And I'm sure they would continue to go. And the Saudis don't care. They've obviously invested billions of dollars in something in Live that they knew stunk and knew probably wouldn't work. But that wasn't the point. We'll get to that in a minute. So they were willing to fight this legal battle for as long as it took. It didn't matter because they knew they were playing a game of legal chicken with the PGA Tour. Could the PGA Tour continue to fund this legal challenge to Live and the Saudis for years to come at a very high price? And then you have to consider that both were losing competitively. No one watched Live Golf. Live Golf as a product was not regarded well. I mean, there are some things that were good about it. I mean, the television coverage is pretty decent. They did some cool things in terms of how they presented the product. But generally, no one watched it and didn't have public support. The PGA Tour still had to answer to them, still had to compete. They had to go and take money that no one's really sure where it came from, but probably from TV rights deals, and add money to the tour. I mean, they threw $50 million at the Player Impact Program out of nowhere. There are rumors that there were some payments issued to players to stay. We all know about that and probably never will, but maybe we will. There were also... I mean, there's so much pressure to revamp the PGA Tour schedule. And for this year, the PGA Tour did subsidize, and I don't know to what degree, but I know they did subsidize the increase in purses for many of the designated events, if not all of them. But next year, they were going to start asking for eight-figure sums from these sponsors to continue to be a designated tournament. Meanwhile, they had sponsors that were walking away because they didn't want to be even further seen as second class to these designated events. And the PGA Tour at the same time still wanted more and more money from them. And the PGA Tour was having difficulty trying to gather new sponsors because they limit the world of sponsorship available to them because they don't want to do business with anyone who does direct business with Saudi Arabia. And Saudi Arabia does business with a lot of people. And so that created a difficulty. So both sides were losing in terms of their product. Problem is, the PGA Tour needs their product. The Saudis don't need Live. They could have walked away. They could have, again, from the perspective of a game of chicken, the Saudis had all the advantage. They didn't need Live Golf to continue. In any capacity, they could continue to do lawsuits. They had all the advantage. So they put themselves in a great leverage situation. And frankly, Jay Monahan messed up at every possible opportunity. And I don't say that lightly. He truly did. From the way that he handled the initial response to players moving to Live, from the bluster that he spoke about publicly, now invoking 9/11, those tapes will never be forgotten. He just didn't understand the threat. And even before Live Golf was a thing, he rejected the overtures from Andy Gardner, who was the head of this idea of the Premier Golf League, which basically his proposal to Monahan is now what's about to happen, where they form a for-profit entity combining commercial interests, and the investor has a stake, the PGA Tour has a stake, and Gardner proposed the players had a stake. Well, we don't know if the players will have a stake moving forward, but it doesn't seem that way. We don't know. And Monahan out of hand rejected it. And I understand why he did, by the way, because he didn't want to give up massive amounts of ownership stake to Andy freaking Gardner. He didn't want to do that. He didn't want to give it to Liv, or rather to the PGL. But once the Saudis got involved and they, with limitless money, could play the long game, he had to have seen something coming. He had to have considered the possibility that something had to be done that was drastic and that wasn't the status quo. But golf was a sport ripe for the picking. And the reason is because it is effectively a monopoly, just like almost every other sport. There is no competition in golf. In the NFL, Major League Baseball, and the NBA, all those sports with franchises, and they have owners. So it's not like the Saudis want to buy the NFL. First of all, they wouldn't be allowed, right? There'd be just too many stakeholders to have to pick off to be successful. Golf is different because there is one significant tour. I mean, the DP World Tour exists. No offense to that, but really one significant tour. And those players are viewed as independent contractors. They are not locked up in contracts to the PGA Tour. They can do what they want. They could be picked off some at a time with another league that could just be effectively a front league and create the pressure that they wanted. And what was golf going to do? What was the PGA Tour going to do when a very sponsor-driven enterprise has to then ratchet up its economic model, has to put their hand out for way more money than they've been asking? Eventually, they were going to find themselves in trouble. And that's where we are, and that's why we're here. And I will probably never forgive Jay Monahan. He's not to apologize to me, but I will hold a grudge against Jay Monahan for probably the rest of my professional career. And I think a lot of PGA Tour players will feel the same. I don't know if he will survive this. I don't know how long he can survive this. I don't know if he's already been paid off. He was asked that apparently in the player meeting on Tuesday night or Tuesday afternoon. And he didn't really give a good answer. So there's a very realistic possibility he has received some money from all of this. Now, what about all of the players who stuck by the PGA Tour? Rory McIlroy, Tiger Woods, Ricky Fowler, go down the line. Those players who didn't cash in because they thought on principle the PGA Tour was worth defending. Tiger and Rory both said, hey, we don't need another dime. We're doing this because we believe in the PGA Tour. A bunch of other players did the same. And they didn't get paid off. What happens to them? How livid are they? Do the Saudis smooth it over with them? Do they pay them a little bit under the table and reward them for staying involved? I don't know. I don't know if the Saudis feel like that's worth doing. Obviously, you can make an argument that they don't deserve it because they didn't take the leap of faith on LIV. Why should they get paid for it on the back end? What's the penalty look like for anybody that's coming back from LIV? I don't think there really will be one. Not one that's that substantial, because the Saudis have the money. So the Saudis will say, okay, well, let them not play for 3 months or 2 months, whatever. But it's not going to be a long time. And then they'll be back in whatever this becomes. And we don't know what that is. We still have no idea about what the structure of the PGA Tour, DP World Tour, LIV, something completely different. We have no idea what any of that looks like. And that, I think, cannot be underscored enough. We are in the very, very early stages of this. And there are a lot of things that can come out of this. So in the second half of this show, I want to talk about what the second stage of all this could be. Second, third, fourth, fifth stages of this could be. Because there's so much that could happen from here that I think we have to try to anticipate some of it and go down a couple of avenues and then see where that maybe leaves us 3, 6, 12, 24 months from now. All right, now a couple words about our sponsor this week, College Golf Experience. Are you a parent of a junior golfer that dreams of playing college golf? If you are, then you need to check this out. College Golf Experience is hosting a top 100 golf camp on July 18th and 19th in Dallas, Texas, bringing together 12 top-ranked college coaches and programs with just 72 junior golfers and their families available for an exclusive opportunity that can't be found anywhere else. College Golf Experience Top 100 camps offer access to top college coaches prior to the June 15th deadline of your junior year under NCAA guidelines. Education seminars on college golf and the recruiting process from the best of the best colleges and coaches and their programs. Seminars and discussions on name, image, and likeness, NIL. on-course evaluation and instruction, as well as one-on-one engagement with top-ranked college coaches, an 18-hole simulated college golf practice and tournament round with coach engagement, and real-time skill assessment and advice from coaches on how to find your fit in college golf. These coaches involved in this camp have worked with the best amateurs in the world, and now they're ready to help you find your right collegiate program fit for you or for your child. But it's not just about the juniors. Parents get a lot out of this too. CGX Top 100 camps have educational seminars on college golf and recruiting, and they give you the inside scoop on the entire process to help you guide your junior golfer to their dream of playing college golf. There are open Q&A sessions where you can ask all of your burning questions to these coaches, and they'll give you great answers straight from the mouth. And by the way, they've just announced that Adidas is the presenting sponsor of this camp. So all players are given two outfits to wear at the camps, and they're treated just like college golfers. Do not miss this great opportunity to experience top-level college golf. Go to collegegolfx.com/top100. That's collegegolfx.com/top100, or you can click the link in our show description on a podcast service. Check it out there and secure your spot today. Okay, second half of the show, as we talk about this blockbuster news from the week, is what happens from here. We've talked about how it all probably came about, what might have led to this, what it might mean in the short term. But we are very much in the beginning of this, and there is a long way to come. There's a lot of things that can happen from here that could derail this from ever happening, that could make it look a whole lot different than we understand. And I think those things are worth exploring. And there are a few different avenues I want to go over here with that. First, so what does the federal government think of this? And more often than not, we don't talk about antitrust or the FTC or the DOJ on this show. That doesn't normally come up, but it's going to come up here as it relates to this quote-unquote merger or whatever you want to call it. And I think both of these organizations, well, three of them, have been reluctant to call it a true merger. They want to call it a merging of commercial interests. But that's not how it works. You can't just say, oh, it's not a merger, and the Department of Justice or the Federal Trade Commission goes, ah, okay, we'll leave it alone. And this administration, the Biden administration, their DOJ, their FTC, their Attorney General, Merrick Garland in particular, have all been showing a lot of scrutiny to big industry-changing deals. They very much have seen offered objections to proposed airline mergers, the Activision-Microsoft merger. There's a lot out there that gives us a reason to believe that the DOJ could view this very much through an anti-competitive lens, through an antitrust lens. They already have opened up an investigation into the PGA Tour for potentially antitrust violations. And that's not going anywhere. No matter what happens, that investigation is still ongoing. Even if the lawsuits go away, and when they go away, the DOJ doesn't go away. They're still going to be there looking for a way to find scrutiny about this deal. And that will happen even though both parties are going to say, well, it's not really a merger. But I think it's worth noting the comments of Steve Ross, who was a former attorney with the DOJ and the FTC, says to USA Today, quote, the PGA Live merger, and by the way, this is a great week for finding out what people who know the difference between the PGA Tour and the PGA of America. Although, by the way, before we finish the quote, because the DP World Tour owns the biggest share of Ryder Cup Europe, this new organization, hypothetically, would own a piece of the Ryder Cup, which means the PGA Tour and the Saudis will own a piece of the Ryder Cup. And the PGA of America, which has a board seat, by the way, on the PGA Tour, might not be able to do a darn thing about it. But back to the quote. Quote, the PGA Live merger is another in a long line of successful efforts by entrenched monopoly organizers of sporting competitions to maintain their dominance through predatory behavior directed toward rivals, followed by swallowing them up. From the point of view of law and economics, Jay Monahan is no different than John D. Rockefeller putting independent gas stations out of business and then folding them into Standard Oil, end quote. That's not the only thing I've seen. That's not the only, I mean, that's a quote on the record. I've talked to a bunch of people off the record about this, about what that could mean, what the world could look like in terms of government scrutiny of all of this. There's no guarantee that they let this go through. None. They could say, just don't do it. And oh, by the way, if the public investment fund puts money into this, the same thing that they've been worried about in this trial, in this lawsuit with the PGA Tour, and their pushback that they aren't subject to the laws of the United States because they're a foreign entity, because they don't do, you know, they're not based in America. Well, if you do business in America, guess what you're subject to? American law and scrutiny. So I don't know that that's necessarily been entirely thought out very well, or maybe that's just a legal gamble they're worth making here. But there's a very realistic possibility that there could be a long-term problem scrutinizing this deal that puts it in limbo. And that creates some really interesting potential forks in that decision tree. Because if the DOJ and the FTC come together and say, well, we need to review this deal, see if it can go through, see if it gets our approval, because this is effectively a bigger monopoly than the PGA Tour already has. We are taking the PGA Tour monopoly that it already has, and then we are going to make it a bigger monopoly with the DP World Tour, its assets, and LIV Golf's assets, which are basically its players. And by the way, Saudi sovereign money. That's going to get a lot of scrutiny, way more than what they've already done. And I that was obviously a big piece of all of this about trying to make the lawsuit go away. Well, maybe the lawsuit does go away, but it might not go away until this is approved, until it's done, which could mean even more money in legal fees and lawyers' fees and all that stuff still happening. I don't know that for sure, right? I can't answer that. I'm not a lawyer. But it does seem like this isn't just magically going away. The FTC and the DOJ aren't. And I don't think the lawsuit magically goes away. And if it does, then the Saudis are stupid. And I don't think that they are. I think they know what they're doing. So this lawsuit isn't going to go away today or tomorrow. Not until there's an agreement. Not till it's signed and not till it's approved. So maybe the lawsuit continues. I don't know. I think that's an interesting piece of this we don't know about yet. But that's one way this doesn't work out, is if the federales say, you can't do this, and we're not going to let you. And that's how it ends. And at that point, does the lawsuit come back on? Do the Saudis just kick LIV back up? What happens there at that point? And that's a long way down the road, but very early on in the process. That's an obvious potential issue here. There's also the possibility that they just can't come to an agreement. They've said here, you know, we've got a framework. There's a lot of details to work out. And the Saudis have to be satisfied with what the outcome is, because that's the only way they give up the lawsuit. And that's the only way all of the legal stuff ends, at least from that perspective, not the federal perspective, but from these two parties suing each other. And so if that's the case, they've got to get to yes. Who owns what? Who gets on the board? What the tour looks like? Will there be a PGA Tour, DP World Tour, and LIV? Will LIV go away and there'll just be a DP World Tour and PGA Tour? What happens when the co-sanctioned parties that are involved put up a stink? Do they get a piece of this? Think about the Asian Tour. Because the Saudis invested $300 some odd million, maybe $300 million over 10 years. They made that agreement to do that, to prop up the Asian Tour. They are half the Asian Tour schedule. The Asian Tour would not exist currently were it not for the Saudis. Do they just say, forget it, we're done here, you can go to hell? What does the DP World Tour say to the Sunshine Tour and the PGA Tour of Australasia, where they have a bunch of co-sanctioned events every year? They just go, well, we got the Saudis now. We don't need you. Goodbye. Don't know. No idea. So we'll see about that. What will the structure of the PGA Tour schedule look like? You would assume It's going to involve some of the best players in the world coming over to Saudi Arabia playing some golf. At least once a year, maybe twice a year, maybe three times a year. Who knows? It's up to them. They get to decide. And the PGA Tour is in no position, unless the lawsuit goes away, for them to say no to much, pretty much anything, other than that they want to technically be in control, at least administratively, while the Saudis are actually in control with the money. But they've got to get to yes. They've got to get to an agreement, one that binds everything together. That's going to be its own set of hurdles, right? So that's one way this doesn't work out. That's going to take some time. Then there's the possibility that the players themselves could sue their own organization. They could sue withstanding, and maybe they come up with a way to say it's malfeasance, or they didn't agree to it, or doesn't represent their interests if there's enough of them. Maybe it never gets there. You're going to have a board approval of this. The PGA Tour board is going to have to approve this. Maybe they just don't. Maybe there is a lawsuit. I don't know. Not sure about that yet. I don't think that's a realistic possibility, a realistically high one, but it is a possibility in all of this. And then the other wrinkle that I can immediately think of, and these are like four things. We could think of probably four or five more if we really kind of cast a bigger net here. But what about Ari Emanuel? Ari Emanuel is the head of Endeavor. They own the UFC, and they recently just bought WWE. And he was on a podcast a couple weeks ago, and this made some headlines, where he said he was strongly considering investing $1 billion into LIV before the Saudis had, and that he could have had a substantial piece of that organization before it was ever formed with Saudi money. Well, what happened was Jay Monahan called him, or got a hold of him, said, please don't do it. We can't have this. And Ari Emanuel backed off. Didn't make the investment because he does a lot of business with the PGA Tour, and he just didn't want to be in that situation with someone he's worked with. Well, Jay Monahan's burned him now. If Emanuel had gotten involved with LIV, probably the Saudis never get involved, and none of this happens. That's just a butterfly effect of it all. So if that's the case, and Emanuel feels burned by the whole thing, what's to stop him from saying, you know what, I am going to start my own golf league. I am going to put that $1-2 billion to work and get this thing off the ground. And I'm going to poach the players and give them personal equity stake in it. And we'll take care of it from here. And I'm going to take Rory and Tiger and Rahm and Scheffler and go down the line. I'm going to do that. How you like that? Again, I think that's a low percentage opportunity, low percentage possibility, but it is one you absolutely have to consider, not just with Ari Emanuel, but any other massively rich person that thinks there might be an opportunity here for players who feel scorned by supporting the PGA Tour to just jump off and go do their own darn thing. And that brings me to the concept of TGL, which we haven't really talked about, and I haven't heard really talked about, but I asked some questions about it from a couple different people I knew in that world yesterday. It was TGL still happening now? Yep, still happening. Still selling stuff, still getting ready for it, all those different things. Monday Night Screen Golf is what I call it, but it's the Tiger Woods and Rory McIlroy joint venture with Mike McCarley, used to be with Golf Channel, and they've already put together a roster of players. They're building this venue in Palm Beach. They are going to have this thing come on air in 2024. Well, maybe those players aren't so happy about what's happening. Maybe those players have decided, or will decide in due time, that they've already started their own league. They own a piece of it already. Why don't we just make this a bigger thing instead of just screen golf or simulator golf? We can do this in real golf courses, real tournaments, and we own it. Why don't we do that? They could do that. They could absolutely do that. Because here's the thing. The money is important, right, to the PGA Tour. But all these guys are rich, and they know a lot of rich people. And they could probably fashion It's a pretty darn good investment. And they probably already have to put this thing together and make it grow. So if that's the case, they're not that far off from being able to splinter off the PGA Tour if they wanted and just leave them in the dust. Because after all, golf is a game of superstars. So why would you then not be able to say, okay, well, you know, we're not happy you went to live, but DJ, Brooks, Bryson, Phil, whatever number of guys. And then you have Tiger and Rory, JT, Scheffler, Rahm, Spieth, go name a bunch of them. And they all get together in a room. They say, well, why don't we just start our own thing and we own it? And then go from there. And I'm sure they could find some pretty hearty money that would invest in it. And they could have their Monday night screen golf if they wanted, purpose-built venue for off weeks. And then they could have actual tournaments at all kinds of different places. Why could they not do that? That could absolutely happen in all of this. Unless the money is that good, that they're not willing to go through the headache of it. But I don't know. And then what happens if Jay Monahan doesn't see this through? Jay Monahan could absolutely lose his job, either because of public pressure, or player pressure, both, board pressure, add that in. Could absolutely lose his job. Totally. But if that happens, then who's in charge of seeing out the deal? I don't know about that. Would that happen? And if any of this breaks down at any point, do the Saudis still agree to walk away from the lawsuit? Or is this just the reality that this is inevitable? I really don't know. I think it's more inevitable than not. But there are so many different ways I could see this going that I'm not convinced it's a done deal. But it's also not at an end point when this organization comes together, because the Saudis are going to want more control and more decision making. And they're going to pump more money and make the PGA Tour more reliant on it to the point that they just can't say no to anything. And that's a very dangerous thing to happen moving forward, because that puts the Saudis in control. And frankly, they haven't done the best job administering LIV. So will players not like that and walk away? I don't know. I'm very curious about all of this. And that's to put aside everything I think about the moral piece of this. I don't think I've been coy in what I feel about LIV, and not specifically LIV, but the Saudi ownership of LIV and the Saudi decision to start a competitive golf league and what that means. I've been against it from the beginning because of the source of the money. Not necessarily because there's a rival golf league, but because it was the Saudis that started it. And so now, as a person who has been very open and honest about all of that, I find myself extremely conflicted and frankly really disappointed and angry that the end of all of this, as predictable as it may have been, by the way, because the end of this was known. The end of this was going to be some kind of gluing and stitching back together of these two things. It was the only way it was going to end. Just didn't know how it was going to happen. And I don't think anyone had any idea it was going to be on this grand of a takeover by the Saudis. Because that's what effectively this is. A hostile takeover with a couple of things to kind of shine it up for the PGA Tour to feel like they have something to talk about as though they won. They didn't. They lost. But as someone who has been thinking about this and talking about this, and I'm sure you have been too, and if you're listening to this, but for people like us who have thought about it, taken opinion on it to the negative about LIV and particularly the Saudi financing of it, it really makes me question my involvement in professional golf. And I don't know what that means moving forward. I think there are a lot of things to figure out. But generally speaking, I think this is bad. I do not think that it is good. And I understand there's a nihilism and a whataboutism about Saudi involvement from a segment of people. They go, well, you know, Saudis are invested in so many things that you use. Yes, those are also mostly publicly traded companies. And so their investment, whether it was at the early stages or not, That was a private thing. And it always feels like when we hear the, you know, don't mix politics with sports things, well, politics is a part of this. Morality, ethics, is a part of this. And then you can get into the, well, the U.S. does bad things. We do business with China, all these different types of things. And I think at a certain point, you either have to decide nothing matters or something matters. And I don't know where I'm going to find myself in all of this coming down the line. But talking about golf is something I've done forever that I can remember. You know, 20 years I've been doing this some fashion. And I don't think that's going to change, but the tone of it might change. The prism might change. GNN Radio has done really well since it's come out about 8 months ago. And frankly, a lot of the focus of what we talk about is not professional golf. And one of my goals, really in the last year or so, has been to create a product and a platform that wasn't just so solely focused on professional golf. This year's been a transition year in a lot of ways for Golf News Net. And I think what I'll hopefully be able to share with you in the next 4 to 6 weeks about another thing that we're working on will cement that. We'll cement that Golf News Net won't be so reliant on professional golf and professional golf coverage. And we'll still do it, but that's going to be a different piece of the pie than it used to be, and it has been historically. And it's going to create some really cool opportunities to illuminate different parts of golf, particularly the kind of golf that us recreational players get to experience and enjoy. And when that comes along, I'll be so excited to tell you about it. But in the meantime, that's just a little bit of a teaser about what's coming. And I think that's the direction that I will probably go. I host a podcast about golf betting. That probably won't change, but I'll feel differently about it. When I make picks and predictions, I'll feel differently about it. And I don't know if that will exacerbate or speed up any willingness to not be in golf anymore, at least talking about professional golf. I don't know. I really don't know. But I feel very much conflicted about all of this and wanted to at least acknowledge that, because I think probably a lot of people are going through that, whether they're PGA Tour players, whether fans like you, other people, other stakeholders in the game. And some people are just going to be cool with it. And ultimately, that's what happened here, is that it wasn't really ever about the moral piece of this. It couldn't have been. Rory McIlroy expressly said a couple of different times, it wouldn't be so bad if the Saudis that wanted to spend money in golf spent it with us instead of on LIV. He got what he wanted. He may have made a stand against LIV, and I think that's what his stand was. He's ethically conflicted about it. He talked about it today at the Canadian Open. But at the end of the day, he's resigned himself to reality. And he's going to have to live with it. And I think for a lot of people, they've put up a nice front about it. But what they really wanted was all that money to be spent with them, to make them rich, to enrich them. And I hope that this full exercise, to its end, whatever that is, finally buries the notion of the phrase, growing the game. I heard that so many times yesterday, it was sickening. This has never been and will never be about growing the game. Growing the game isn't about growing the game. Growing the game means making my pocket more full of money because someone wants to spend with me. That's what it's about. And the greed that will be exhibited here for the next 3, 5, 10, 20, 50 years, whatever it is, that will demonstrate that there's never been a bigger chasm between professional golf and recreational golf. And I still very, very much love recreational golf. That's not going to change. My love affair of this game is not going to go away. But I think I've kind of found myself over the last year and change pulling away more from professional golf and more toward the game that you and I get to enjoy. And that might just wind up being where I put more of my resources and time to bear in hopefully presenting the game that way and actually trying to enhance participation, get more people involved, not only with our content, but with also some other things that are starting to work itself out, but again, can't tell you about them quite yet. All right, I think that's enough. Thank you so much for spending some time talking with me about this, or letting me talk to you about it. I hope you've enjoyed it, or at least gotten something out of it. It's not been the best week. It's Wednesday, and there's still going to be a whole lot more to come, and there are going to be a lot of tough days if you were on kind of this side of things. And if you weren't, then you probably didn't care to begin with, and you probably don't care now. So you're probably doing okay. But we'll be back next week with another show. Maybe we'll get into some of this. I have no idea what's coming, so I don't really want to try to preface anything that's going to happen. But we will have a U.S. Open next week, and we're going to talk about that. And we'll talk about LACC and everything that's coming up related to the third men's major of the year. And hopefully we get to have some fun while all of this starts to kind of take shape. If you listen to us as a podcast, on a service that lets you do it, please leave us a 5-star review. Leave a comment. Helps us reach more people. You can email me, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at ryanbalaji. Admittedly, don't tweet a whole lot except this week because of, you know, this. But I'm on Instagram too, so reach me there if you're interested. All right, we will be back next week with another show. Thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next time on the 19th Hole Golf Show.